Copper and Brass Incorporated, founded by Paul Revere in 1801, fabricators of copper, copper alloys, and aluminum alloys for home and industry, and makers of the famous Revere ware, presents Meet the Press.
Our guest of the afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, will be the Honorable Harold Stassen, who recently announced his candidacy for the Republican presidential nomination. But before we meet the press, let us meet Kenneth D. Wells, president of the Valley Forge Foundation, and Governor Millard Caldwell, administrator of the Federal Civil Defense Administration, who have a few words to say about the vital importance of civil defense to the preservation of your freedom. Mr. Wells.
Governor Caldwell, I think it is appropriate that we have this opportunity to talk about the Alert America convoys today on Meet the Press program. Because in just a few short hours, both of us will be meeting the press together here in Washington at the scene of the Alert America exhibit, which goes on public display for the first time in the nation's capital tomorrow. This is a joint undertaking of the Federal Civil Defense Administration and our Valley Forge Foundation. I think these people will want to wish us good luck and Godspeed on our mission to alert America.
It's equally appropriate, Mr. Wells, that we are discussing this Alert America expedition in front of the symbol of Paul Revere, which appears at the entrance of the exhibit. For every schoolboy in America knows the story of Paul Revere's ride. He alerted America to enemy danger, and he did it dramatically. That's just what we are trying to do in sending out three separate Alert America convoys across the nation. We want to alert America dramatically, swiftly, and effectively against enemy danger. For the danger is just as real, and it may be just as immediate.
Well, during the next 6 months, we're going to try to reach dozens of the major cities of the United States with these important Alert America exhibits. The action exhibits will be put in large buildings and armories where thousands of people daily can come and invest an hour in learning the necessary facts of this atomic age.
These facts will not be hard to understand. They'll be graphic. They'll come to life in sight, sound, and motion as you stand before them. When the Alert America convoy comes to your city, be sure to see it. There'll be no admission charge. The exhibit's too important to price tag. You may see it cost-free, but on the other hand, not learning the lessons it has to offer may mean a heavy price for you to pay if attack comes. This Alert America show can save your life.
These exhibits should be seen by your whole family. Let them see the atom bomb destruction of a city, the Americana room depicting the great American ideals and freedoms based on the fundamental belief in God, and constitutional government designed to serve the people, and our indivisible bundle of political and economic rights. The challenge to these freedoms by the danger of atomic, biological, and chemical warfare is graphically depicted.
You'll see the 10 services in civil defense. They'll be in action to help you decide where you can fit your own skills into your own community's civil defense needs. You can learn some of the simple, common sense things you can do as an individual for your own protection in case of an attack.
Well, I think we can say, Governor, that this display is more than a big show. It's the result of a notable kind of cooperation. An agency of the federal government, the Federal Civil Defense Administration, and all the civil defense offices of the cities and states cooperating with Valley Forge Foundation, each in turn having the cooperation of private American industries, many of whom donated individual parts of the exhibit. And incidentally, we'd like to thank the sponsors of this program for their contribution of time this afternoon. All of this adds up to something pretty important. Americans everywhere joining in a spirit above partisanship to promote our common defense.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, Meet the Press, America's press conference of the air. Ready for this afternoon's unrehearsed, spontaneous press conference are four of America's top reporters. Please remember that their questions do not necessarily reveal their point of view. It is their way of getting a story for you. And now, here is the moderator of Meet the Press, Miss Martha Roundtree.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another session of Meet the Press. You've met our guest, Governor Harold Stassen, candidate for the presidency of the United States. Now meet the press. First, Mr. Richard Wilson of the Des Moines Register and Minneapolis Tribune. Next, Mrs. Ruth Montgomery, New York Daily News. And Mr. Marshall McNeil of the Scripps Howard newspapers. And finally, Mr. Lawrence Spivak, a regular member of our Meet the Press panel. Now, Governor, if you're ready, I think we will let Mrs. Montgomery have the first question.
Governor, as you know, Senator Lodge is asserting positively that General Eisenhower is a Republican. Did he give you to believe that when you talked with General Eisenhower in Paris?
You're certainly starting out with a $64 question, Ms. Montgomery. But as I've indicated, I feel that it's only right that I leave Senator Lodge make the predictions and statements about General Eisenhower's campaign, and that I should not give personal conversations when I was his guest, especially since I've now decided, from all the information I've had, that I should permit my name to be presented as a candidate, and so I'm moving forward with my campaign.
Well, did you and Ike, by any chance, make any little informal deals about what would happen to your candidacy if he decided to run?
None whatsoever. In other words, I have never made a deal with anyone in all my years of public life, and I will not now, and I have not. Well, so we're starting out, Ms. Montgomery, on a very affirmative campaign and on what we feel is a constructive program of the platform I'd carry out as president with these four principal planks, as you know: the modern gold standard for the solid dollar and stop this inflationary drive, an upright, honest administration and wipe out this corruption in the nation's capital, the profit-sharing in industry, and a new American foreign policy for the future of our country.
Well, just one more question on Ike for me. Would you be willing to run as his vice presidential running mate?
No, we've made an all-out drive for president, and that will be our campaign from this time forward.
Mr. Spivak.
Governor, on November 4th on this program, you said, and I quote this, "When the time comes, and it will be about next January, I will be very frank and very direct with the American people as to what my stand is on the issues."
Right.
"And what my stand is on the other candidates and what I'm going to do myself." Is
right.
Is that correct?
Right.
Well, now, sir, in your press conference on December 30th, you said that it was a correct assumption, and the words are quoted, correct assumption, that your recent talks in Paris with Eisenhower had a direct bearing, and the words "direct bearing" are quoted, on your decision to run again. Now, did you mean by that you had concluded that General Eisenhower will not run, or did you mean by that you had concluded that you and General Eisenhower were not in agreement on some issues?
No, I meant that I had concluded from everything I learned over there and in this country that the right thing for me to do was to permit my name to be presented and begin an all-out drive for the Republican nomination for the presidency on the platform that I've presented.
Well, why did you conclude that after you had seen General Eisenhower? What happened between the two of you that made you come to that conclusion when you had not reached that conclusion before you saw him?
Because I concluded that I must make a decision by the 1st of January, and that the only way to give the American people a choice in the various primaries and conventions that are coming up as to foreign policy and as to a domestic program was for me to present the platform I believed in, the platform I'd carry out as president, and then let the people decide.
Well, now, sir, we know that you differ with Senator Taft on foreign policy. Now, in view of what you've just said, does that mean that you differ with General Eisenhower either on foreign policy or on some domestic issues?
Well, I suppose the only right answer to that one is that you must await to see whether General Eisenhower does express his views on these other issues. And that, as I say, should be left to Senator Lodge as his manager. It's only right and just I should leave it to him, and, of course, to General Eisenhower himself.
But I've
always followed the rule, Mr. Spivak. I will be very direct as to what I believe, how I stand, what issues I present. But I have never violated a confidence of any other public figure, whether it's Mr. Churchill, who's now on our shores, who I've seen many times, or whether it's been President Hoover, General MacArthur, or General Eisenhower.
I can quite understand that. I'm not asking you to tell me what General Eisenhower said to you. I'm only asking you to tell us what made you come to that decision at that time in view of what you told the world before then?
The thing that made me come to the decision was that it became clear to me that the only way I could present to the American people this time a choice in platforms and policies for the Republican Party was to present the platform I believed in and go into these primaries. And that's why I've announced that I would immediately test the primaries of Minnesota, Pennsylvania, and Ohio, which are the three home states, so to speak, of Senator Taft and myself, and why, Mr. Spivak, I will today announce on Meet the Press that because of the importance of foreign policy in the Republican Party and before America, I will enter the Illinois primary in this Republican presidential race, and on April 8th, I will present to the people of Illinois the foreign policy I believe in for their decision as to what foreign policy they want their country and the Republican Party to follow.
May I have one more question? You said you wanted the people to have a choice.
That's right.
Between platforms. Well, does that mean then that you know what General Eisenhower's platform is and that there will be a choice between your platform and his platform?
It means that I have concluded that the only way a choice can be presented to the people of Minnesota and Pennsylvania and Ohio and Illinois and I'm certain other states will be by my presenting an affirmative platform and a program. And, of course, foreign policy in Illinois is an example. That filing must take place between January 14th and January 21st, and the candidate himself must sign. The last I've heard, there's still no word whatsoever from General Eisenhower personally as to what he intends to do. And, therefore, his name cannot be presented in Ohio or Illinois or Pennsylvania in these key primaries. And clearly, then, if the American people are to have a choice, then it is up to me, as I see it, in my responsibility, to tell them very plainly what I believe should be the program of our country, and then let the people decide.
Mr. Wilson.
Governor Stassen, why are you taking so long to decide whether or not to go into the first primary, which is the one in New Hampshire?
Because these other big ones have an earlier closing date and great petition requirements, and I had to move on them very promptly. And we are moving, you realize, we're late in our decision to run in the first place.
Well,
we felt January 1st was the latest possible date. Today I'm announcing Illinois, which you'll agree is a very important state. In fact,
today,
it's been called the towering center of the foreign policy issue.
Yes, tomorrow is, however, is the first filing day in New Hampshire.
That's right. Within a week, I will meet with our New Hampshire supporters. See, I haven't been in New England since I returned. I'm going to Wisconsin the next couple days, and I'll decide Wisconsin. Then I'll go to New England. I'll decide the New England states.
Well, now,
and just as quickly as we can make those decisions, Mr. Wilson, we'll let you know.
In the case of New Hampshire, does your hesitancy about entering that primary have anything to do with the fact that General Eisenhower's name will be entered in it?
There's no hesitancy in entering it. It's a matter of reaching the decisions as quickly as you can after the consultation with your supporters in the state.
But you had no hesitancy in 1948. You entered that primary right away against Dewey and got two delegates, as I recall.
Yes, but then I was a candidate very early, and I'd consulted my supporters many months ahead.
Some people
now, I've only been
a candidate a long time since.
Well, you're entitled to that view, but definitely, Mr. Wilson, my decision was made just prior to December 27th, this year, this 1951, and we've been moving just as fast as we can since we've made that decision.
Matter of fact, we've
moved faster in our decisions in that respect than Senator Taft has. I haven't heard yet whether he would be in any other primaries other than Wisconsin and Ohio. Have you?
No, I haven't. I think that
he's been in the field much longer and that he hasn't indicated his decision on many of these.
I'm glad you brought his name into the discussion because I wanted to ask you this. To an outsider, it might appear that the activities of yourself, Governor Warren, and those people who are supporting Eisenhower is entirely intended to prevent the nomination of Senator Taft, and that when the time comes, it is conceivable that all of you might get out of the race in favor of some third or fourth or fifth person. Do you see any prospect of anything like that?
No, I would say that definitely is not our program. In other words, when I decided to run, it was the initiation of an all-out campaign. Now, the reason that Senator Taft's name comes up frequently is that you yourself in your stories have indicated he's out in front, he has the inside support of the established Republican leaders.
Speaking for myself, I've never indicated that, Governor, but you, some other people have. I'll agree to that.
Well, your papers have, put it that way. I never followed
well,
exactly.
Well, sir, I'll
what
have to challenge that. But, no. Let's
they have say. Indicated that he was out in front. And, of course, the great issue, the number one issue before the American people is foreign policy. You ask the people in their homes today, what are they most concerned about? And one home will say, we're most concerned about whether our teenage boys are going to be called into military service. Another home with small children, they're most concerned whether they can balance that family budget. The third home might be most concerned about these rising taxes. Now, the failures in the foreign policy of the Truman administration are the direct reason for the military calls, for the high taxes, and for the inflationary price rises. So that I feel foreign policy is the number one issue. And you see, I feel that President Truman's foreign policy and Senator Taft's foreign policy are both bad for the American people. No. Must present an affirmative and dynamic new American. The only way to do it is to bring it forward as a platform.
Now, Mr. McNeil.
Your invitation to Senator Taft to join you in the support of Eisenhower is now out the window, of course, isn't it?
That's right, yes.
As a student of history and government, How do you feel about a professional military man being president of the United States?
Vigil, and finally, the decision of the people.
You would support General Eisenhower enthusiastically if nominated?
Well, the Republican nominee has always had my support, so that you have to jump over a lot of hurdles before you answer your question in that respect.
Your campaign manager asking for a primary election in Arkansas has said, Mr. Stassen, that he believes your platform has widespread support among voters of the South.
That's right.
And you did make a considerable campaign there 4 years ago, as I remember.
Right.
Would you tell those voters now how you stand on the Truman Civil Rights Program, on FEPC, on segregation, etc.?
Yes, my stand is still the same as it was then, which is in favor of a fair employment practices law with a gradual progress to be made. Matter of fact, I think the speech is in this book that Mr. Amos Peasley put together, my past speeches, Man Was Meant to Be Free. My stand is the same, and I intend to speak of it and develop it during this campaign.
You, in your announcement, Mr. Stassen,
in other words, I have been very strong for human rights from my college days.
You announced, in your announcement, you said that you would consult men like General MacArthur and Herbert Hoover and Jim Farley and Senator Byrd and Ralph Bunche and others.
Yes.
Would you say that prior to using their names, you'd notified them that you were going to name them as your advisors?
No, I said in my speech that this does not imply that they are involved in my campaign, but it does mean they are the senior people who I feel have been superlative patriots and who know these special subjects, and I would turn to them for advice and counsel as president, just as I did in other responsibilities I've had to senior men. Take my foreign policy, Mr. McNeil. It really comes from the views of General MacArthur, the late Senator Vandenberg, General Eisenhower, Bernard Baruch, and Ralph Johnson Bunche. These five men, each in their special field, General MacArthur's emphasis that world communism was our opponent, that we had to have a definite program for it. General Eisenhower's emphasis on building Western Europe. Bernard Baruch's emphasis that you must check inflation and look at world raw materials. Senator Vandenberg's emphasis on bipartisanship. And Ralph Bunche's emphasis on the people who need help in the Asian Africa area. Now, that's the basis of the answer to your question.
Something a little more mundane. The campaign that you're going to conduct, going into all these primaries, is going to cost a whale of a lot of money.
That's right.
Where are you going to get it? Who are your big contributors?
We don't have big contributors. We're looking for, and we need badly, 100,000 men and women who give us $5 apiece for this campaign. That's our main financial effort.
You mean
Mr. Tom Gates, a banker, friend of mine in Philadelphia, has agreed to be the national treasurer.
It's going to cost you more than $500,000, isn't it?
Not much more. We'll have less money than the others have, but we have great volunteer help. We've always had, and we'll have again. And if we can get 100,000 men and women of America to send us in $5 apiece, we'll put on a real set of primary campaigns.
Well, last time you got 157 delegates on that first ballot, I believe, didn't you?
That's right.
What makes you think you're likely to get any more this time?
Because I think there's still more support among the American people for the things I believe in now than there was then. In other words, I think the 4 years that have gone by have shown that the Truman foreign policy is bad and has had many failures.
Well, you know
it has shown that Senator Taft has been wrong in foreign policy. And so I believe that we will build up greater public support this time than last time, and that we will demonstrate it in these great primaries, including Illinois, that I said today I would test. Remember, in 48, we didn't go into Illinois. In fact, then they had a Republican administration in the state. That was very badly defeated.
Are you going into Wisconsin?
I anticipate that we will. I'm going out to see my supporters there on Tuesday. They're very active now in preparing a campaign.
Governor, when you propose that Senator Taft join with you for a draft of Eisenhower on November 28th, that made front page news. Now, why did you withdraw that proposal and then come out yourself? I mean, what happened?
Well, if Senator Taft would have joined, as I then said, and if General Eisenhower would then accept as a call such a combined draft, clearly then a draft to a nomination rather than a draft to engage in a fight for a nomination, then we could bring our party together in unity and concentrate on the defeat of the Truman administration.
You've said that you operate independently. Why should what Senator Taft does or doesn't do have any effect upon what you do? Why can't you come out for Eisenhower by yourself and put all your eggs in that basket rather than wait for Senator Taft?
Because as long as Senator Taft is a candidate and is driving hard with his powerful organization, then it means that the only way there can be any other nomination is through the decision of the voters in the primaries and conventions. So then any call to anyone becomes a call to engage in a fight with Senator Taft. That's a very different call than a call to accept a practically unanimous nomination.
You're more likely to take delegates from General Eisenhower than from Senator Taft, aren't you?
Oh, no. Look at the Wisconsin primary. Look at the Ohio primary. Look at the Pennsylvania primary.
Are you
planning
to help General Eisenhower? I don't quite follow. No,
I'm planning to present our platform and seek the support of 600 delegates in that convention for the nomination and the election. That's the decision we've made. And you'll see week after week, Mr. Wilson will get more and more decisions to his questions. Week after week, we'll hope more and more people will send small contributions in, and we'll show you a real campaign for the Republican nomination.
But what made you change your mind?
You always persist, Mr. Spivak. It is perfectly all right. It's one of the things that makes these Meet the Press programs sparkle, is your persistence.
Thank you, sir. What made you change your mind, though, about that draft and declare for yourself?
I didn't change my mind about it.
Well, you asked
I
for
a
draft,
we had
and
to
you declare for yourself.
I said we had to decide by the first of the year whether or not there would be a contest in the Republican Party and whether I would take a part in that contest. And I said that if there could be a unanimous draft of General Eisenhower and that it would require Senator Taft's approval, then we'd find out whether General Eisenhower would answer that draft. But we couldn't get such a unanimous draft.
Then have you decided that General Eisenhower is not going to make a contest?
Well, as I said to you earlier, I think it's only right and only just and fair that I should leave all of the conclusions of what General Eisenhower is going to do to be for you gentlemen of the press.
This is your conclusion.
My conclusion was that I must enter the race and run in order to give the American people a choice.
Do you think, Governor, that you can that you would make a better president than Eisenhower?
Well, that's a very difficult question to answer.
Well, you wouldn't run for something unless you thought you were going to be better.
I believe that I can do a good job for the American people, and I believe sincerely in the platform that I'm advocating, and I'm willing to present it to the people, let them decide, and I'll accept their decision in good faith.
Have you decided on a cabinet yet? You've decided on the people whom you want to call on for help. What about your cabinet?
My cabinet will be some of the ablest, some of the youngest men.
Let's get specific. Who are some of the ablest?
Well, it's a little early to speak of them specifically, but you know them well as I do.
Talk about your
advisors.
Matter
of fact, I have made up my mind I'll have two women in my cabinet, two of the outstanding women in America.
Montgomery and Roundtree.
Two very fine women on the panel.
Who are the women, Governor?
It's a little early to pick a cabinet, but I will say to you that they're going to be outstanding, and we're going to insist on absolute honesty on every employee we have in the nation's capital. And anyone that goes over the line of ethics will leave the Capitol so fast you won't be able to see the dust.
Who would your choice for Secretary of State be?
Too early to say that, but it'll be someone who basically believes that America should have a dynamic, affirmative policy to defeat communism without war and to turn all nations away from socialism.
Are there many people like that available?
Yes, there are.
Couldn't name just one for us?
I don't think it'd be constructive today to name one. I think I may name them as the campaign goes on. But after all, the campaign, as far as I'm concerned, is about 10 days old, and we're moving as fast as we can, consistent with careful planning and careful decisions.
Mrs. Montgomery.
Governor, do you agree with President Truman that corruption will not be one of the major issues in 52?
I suppose that's on the theory that the Truman administration knows exactly where it is and therefore will clean it out. But no, I don't agree to that. I think it'll be a very major issue.
You spoke about foreign policy you thought would be the principal issue.
That'll probably be the principal issue inside the Republican Party in these primaries. In other words, whether we do turn toward what I think is a defensive and semi-isolationist policy, or whether we turn to a very affirmative, dynamic policy to recognize American leadership in the world and win. But versus the Truman administration, corruption will be one of the important issues. The inflation and cheapening of the dollar will be a second, and I think their stirring up of internal strife, particularly between labor and capital, will be a third.
Do you think that the president should ask for the resignations of McGrath and Snyder?
I do. I think all these men who've shown either incompetence or winking at unethical conduct in their administrations ought to leave the Capitol tomorrow.
Matter of fact,
I feel that the Truman administration has had more men with low principles in high places than any other administration
sorry,
in American history.
I'm sorry, Governor. I have to interrupt. Our time is up. I'm sorry, Mr. Wilson. I didn't get to you next time. I'll start first with you. This concludes the latest edition of Meet the Press. Thank you, Governor Stassen, for being with us. And now, a word about next week's guest.
Tune in next week at the same time when Revere, Copper and Brass Incorporated, will again present Meet the Press, when our guest will be Mr. Leon Keiserling, Chairman of the President's Council of Economic Advisers, whose report will soon be submitted to the President. And now, good afternoon for Mr. Richard Wilson, Miss Ruth Montgomery, Mr. Marshall McNeil, Mr. Lawrence Spivak, Miss Martha Roundtree, Mr. Harold Stassen. You've met the press. Now meet Revere Ware.